This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to Africa News Tonight. Thank you for joining us. I'm Mukbil Yabro, and here's what's coming up.
In Africa, you still have 600 million people who don't have access to energy. No health, no education, no business, no jobs, no prospects. Whether it comes to the UN sustainable goals, we are totally off track.
That was Nathalie Delapalme, executive director of the Mo Ibrahim Foundation, who says much of the developed world is out of touch with conditions in Africa. Also, voting is underway in Somalia's breakaway region of Somaliland in a key presidential election. And Zimbabwe has recorded new cases of cholera several months after declaring the end of an outbreak. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Voting is underway today in Somalia's breakaway region of Somaliland in a key presidential election. President Musa Bihi Abdi of the ruling Kulmiye Party is seeking a second term after 7 years in office. His top competitors include Abdirahman Mohamed Abdullahi of the main opposition Wadini Party and Faisal Ali Warbi of the Justice and Welfare Party. Somaliland, which declared independence from Somalia in 1991 amid a descent into conflict, has sustained its own government, currency, and security structures. Over the years, the region has built a stable political environment despite not having international recognition, in contrast to Somalia's ongoing struggles with insecurity. A short time ago, our colleague Mohamed Olad Hassan with the VOA Somali Service spoke with editor Kate Pound Dawson about the election.
Thank you, Katie. Over 1 million registered voters are voting for the for their president for the next 5 years across Somaliland regions. The election day is smooth. There are long queues at more than 2,000 polling stations in Somaliland. Three main candidates, including the incumbent president Musa Bihi Abdi, are vying for the position of the president. And so far, our reporters and stringers on the ground are reporting that no incident happened.
What are the issues at stake? What are the big issues the candidates are going after?
Well, according to interviews with the VOA, the three main candidates, Musa Bihi Abdi of Kulmiye Party and Faisal Ali Warabi of the Uid Party and Abdirahman Erro of the Wadani Party, all of them were saying that their aim is to strengthen democracy, boost economic growth, and gain international recognition for the region. With the international recognition, the main point for the election this year, because we know Somaliland seceded from Somalia in 1991 after the collapse of Siad Barre regime. It lacked international recognition for 33 years. So each of these candidates is saying that after 33 years, his aim is to get recognition from the international community. So the main issue is that, and the second one is economic, and the third one is Somaliland talks with Somalia and how this region will go ahead with that.
When do we expect results? Has there been a deadline set for getting everything counted and results announced?
No, so far no deadline was set for the results, but normally in Somaliland and according to the previous elections, when the polling station is closed at 7 o'clock local time in Africa time, the polling station is closed, then they will start counting, and the Electoral Commission of Somaliland say that it may take 1 or 2 days to complete the counting, and then they will announce the result of the election.
That was Mohamed Olad Hassan with our Somali service speaking with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson. At this hour, U.S. President Joe Biden is meeting at the White House with his successor, President-elect Donald Trump. The meeting between a departing president and a new one is a traditional part of the transition to a new administration. Trump arrived earlier today in Washington, fresh from his victory in last week's election, in which the Republican defeated Vice President Kamala Harris, the Democratic Party's candidate. This will be Trump's second presidency he served from 2017 to 2021. Donald Trump is moving quickly to fill his new administration with Republican officials, many of whom have been politically loyal to him while he was out of office. Trump, according to various U.S. news accounts, intends to nominate Florida Senator Marco Rubio as a Secretary of State, the country's top diplomat, but that announcement has yet to be made. On Tuesday night, he announced South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem as his choice for Homeland Security Chief. Trump also announced that billionaire businessman Elon Musk and entrepreneur and former Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy will lead what he called the Department of Government Efficiency. The announcement said they would provide advice and guidance to drive large-scale structural reform of the federal government. Staying with Trump, African leaders may have been quick to congratulate Donald Trump on his election, professing a desire for mutual beneficial partnerships. But the Associated Press says there are meager expectations that his second presidency will change things for the continent of over 1.4 billion people. In the wake of Trump's remarkable win, Kenya's William Ruto said his country stands ready to deepen its ties with Washington. Nigeria's Bola Tinubu spoke of a second Trump administration ushering in an era of earnest, beneficial, and reciprocal cooperation. Still, observers say African countries are definitely not going to be high on his to-do list. At the annual United Nations Climate Change meeting in Azerbaijan, developing regions, including Africa, are arguing for more financing to help them cope with changing weather patterns. One argument they are making is that wealthy nations do not understand the structural and financial roadblocks African nations face in confronting climate change. Darren Taylor reports.
Delegates at the United Nations COP29 conference going on in Baku, Azerbaijan, have emphasized that developing regions, including Africa, are not responsible for the temperature rises that are causing suffering globally. Many scientists say Africa is bearing the worst of climate change, with droughts and floods causing crop failures and displacing millions of people across the continent. Scientists say burning oil, coal, and gas to drive the economies of rich countries caused the high emission levels that have sparked global warming. Natalie Delpam, executive director of the Mo Ibrahim Foundation, says much of the developed world is out of touch with conditions in Africa.
In Africa, you still have 600 million people who don't have access to energy. No health, no education, no business, no jobs, no prospects. When it comes to the UN sustainable goals, we are totally off track. The current climate debate is still very much led by already developed countries for which energy transition doesn't have the same meaning as they have for their people.
Della Palm says renewable energy systems must be built from scratch in Africa, unlike in Europe and North America, where there's already infrastructure and big budgets. She's hoping COP29 delivers what she calls a sensible conversation about how developed countries can help Africa confront its specific challenges.
It's absolutely key to see Africa as a key potential player when it comes to building a green global economy. Without Africa's potential, without Africa's assets, without Africa's critical minerals, there will be no green global economy.
Africa's home to many of the minerals and metals needed to manufacture green energy systems, such as wind turbines and solar power stations. Della Palm says African countries should use this as leverage to negotiate more financing. But Rachel Antwi, head of sustainability at Ecobank, a pan-African banking group, says there are a lot of barriers to ramping up climate investment on the continent.
The top biggest one is lack of access to affordable finance. For example, for a bank like Ecobank, we've managed to raise about $500 million in the last 2 to 3 years. What we find is that the loan is always very expensive, and so very difficult for us to on-lend to our customers to be able to finance enough climate finance transactions. Also very expensive to lend to them, whether in local currency or even in foreign currency.
Antwi says even when there's money, there's not much preparation in Africa for climate adaptation and mitigation.
Another key problem that we also find is infrastructure gaps, right? Lack of proper infrastructure systems. Another point that is also very important that I find is a lack of bankable projects. So even if there is an interest and there's a small pool of money that we can use, we do not have enough ready-made projects that are scalable, that has investor interest or is attractive enough for the investors to be able to invest it.
Della Palm says fair climate financing in the form of trillions and not billions of dollars will solve a lot of these issues and is the only way to unlock Africa's potential for green industrialization. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
South Africa's Gauteng provincial government has gazetted new bylaws limiting the operation of backyard grocery and food shops largely owned by foreign nationals. This follows the death of several children from food poisoning linked to such shops. Tuso Kamalo reports from Johannesburg.
Under the proposed bylaws, all backyard grocery shops operators in Gauteng province must apply for new licenses based on strict conditions. The premises must be inspected by health inspectors to ensure they meet health and food safety standards. The owners of these shops, popularly known as spaza shops in South Africa, also must list the kind of food they sell and name the wholesalers where they buy their stock. Foreign-owned shops will be required to employ a certain number of South Africans. Panyaza Lesufi is the premier of the Gauteng province. He announced the bylaws during a news briefing on Sunday.
If you are not registered, you can't operate now. So we are setting out the registration process and means that you can operate if you have not been properly registered. If municipalities adopt this gazette by the end of this month, from the 1st of December, we believe that there is a common approach across the province.
He said 23 children have died of food poisoning in the province this year out of 441 cases of food poisoning linked to spaza shops. Although Lesufi says anyone in the country legally will be allowed to apply for the new licenses, Herman Mashaba, the leader of the Action SA party, says immigrants have no share in the township economy.
We've reached a stage where we says we are not going to sit back any longer. This township economy has to really be owned by our own people, whether documented or undocumented to foreign nationals. I think if they are good business people, let them go and run businesses in their own countries.
This is a stance many South Africans support, including Soweto Township resident Titus Modang.
If they go, the government needs to give us a chance of subsidizing the black people or the black community to run all these spaza shops and get rid of these foreign nationals to come and make business into our country.
More than 2.5 million foreigners, most of them from other African countries, live in South Africa, and many citizens blame them for the unemployment rate, which tops 30%. Bongani Mkhwananzi, a spokesperson of the African Diaspora Forum, says although it's very regrettable that children have lost their lives in suspected food poisoning, the new legislation should not be used to exclude innocent immigrant entrepreneurs.
We also are worried about an intent to purge out migrant spaza shop owners. And we are hoping that during the stage where regulations are being implemented, the target should not be to purge out, but to fix the health and safety of consumers.
Government investigations found traces of organophosphate, a pesticide, in the blood samples of children who died. These investigations are yet to establish how the chemicals ended up in the food the children are thought to have eaten. For VOA News, I am Tuso Kumalo in Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Mukbil Yabaro, here in Washington. We'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by joining us on WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing our listener comments on Africa News Tonight. Zimbabwe has recorded new cases of cholera several months after declaring the end of an outbreak which has killed more than 700 people over 18 months. Columbus Mavunga reports from the capital, Harare, where health experts say the government needs to deal with the conditions that allowed the waterborne disease to spread.
Zimbabwe confirmed Wednesday that a new outbreak of cholera has been recorded in the district of Karibam on the border with Zambia, where 21 cases have been confirmed and one person dead. Dr. Godfrey Muza, the Kariba District Medical Officer, says the government is working to contain the situation.
We've set up cholera treatment camps and also some oral rehydration points within the affected villages. We're getting assistance from our local partners and also some regional partners like MSF and UNICEF. And our teams are on the ground doing all the risk communication and the community engagement activities and health promotion, hygiene promotion, and assisting the community in terms of improving their sanitation.
The Zimbabwe government declared in August that the 18-month-long cholera outbreak was over after affecting up to 35,000 people and claiming more than 700 lives. Zimbabwe has dealt with cholera outbreaks in the past. In 2008, an outbreak resulted in more than 98,000 cases and more than 4,000 reported deaths. Independent health experts like Dr. Norman Matara of Zimbabwe Doctors for Human Rights say the government needs to address the conditions that enable the waterborne disease spread.
In public health, we often say cholera is a disease of poverty, which mainly affects people with inadequate access to safe water and basic sanitation. In Zimbabwe, we've witnessed perennial cholera outbreaks in recent years. These outbreaks are being caused by a lack of safe drinking water supply and a broken down sanitation system, which leaves residents in densely populated communities surrounded by flowing raw sewer. This raw sewer will then contaminate alternative sources of water, such as shallow wells, streams, rivers, and even boars, resulting in people drinking or eating food contaminated with the cholera bacteria.
He added that those conditions have been chronic over the years in Zimbabwe, contributing to the repeated outbreaks. How does Zimbabwe get out of this cycle of recurring cholera outbreaks? Dr. Matara explains.
We need to make sure that our hospitals are well supplied with rehydration solutions and medicines so that people can be assisted. And also those high-risk communities, especially in towns and urban cities, we may give them the oral cholera vaccine so that they may be protected. In the long term, the government needs to invest more in proper sanitation facilities and infrastructure, as well as making sure that people are provided with clean, safe water for drinking and cooking.
Dr. Matara says he hopes that the current outbreak is quickly contained and does not spread to other parts of Zimbabwe. But with raw sewage flowing in some streets of Harare, it might be just a question of time. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare.
West Africa, particularly Ghana and Nigeria, has seen a rise in so-called hustle kingdoms, informal academies where young people are trained to carry out digital scams. Timothy Obiezu gained rare access to one of these centers and has this report from Lagos.
Young people puff on cigarettes before the day's work. The job to scam unsuspecting victims on the internet. Wizzy and his associates say they work in a hustle kingdom, a place where people are trained to carry out cyber crimes. They spoke to VOA on the condition of anonymity. On this day, Wizzy says they're on the verge of a big break.
I'm your mistress. The verification.
basic potential victims in online chats.
Like going to Instagram, liking posts and comments. I can go to USA today now, do their post today. I will start war. I will read traffic on the comments. They won't even think I'm a scam. From there, people will add me.
And many who take the bait get scammed.
Is it here? He's worshipping me like this.
Why are you doing this? Can you tell us?
I'm a graphic designer. I do work. I do office work, Microsoft Word, Excel, PowerPoint. Some people give you work. They will not pay. I have work here. They tell me that 3,000. I like this country, 3,000.
That's less than $2 a job for legal work. Here, Weezy says he's already made thousands in online scams, mostly targeting Americans. Officials say fraudsters from West Africa are gaining global notoriety. Nigeria's Economic and Financial Crimes Commission says the country loses about $500 million annually to cybercrime, including online fraud, phishing, identity theft, and attacks on financial institutions. Authorities say 3,400 offenders have been convicted in the past year and hundreds of millions of dollars recovered. To help, Nigeria in late October launched a 24-hour cybercrime rapid response desk.
It's a containment strategy. It is a preventive framework. You know, it's an initiative to save members of the public from any damage, from any loss that cybercrime, you know, may want to bring.
National figures show the country is struggling with high unemployment and inflation that reached a 28-year high this year. Adeniyi says he's turned to online fraud as a more reliable source of income for his family.
I have to work hard, take care of my mom, buy whatever she wants.
A spokesman with the Nigeria's Economic and Financial Crimes Commission says the country is also planning to open a cybercrime research center to help Nigerians with tech skills to find legal ways to support themselves and their families. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Lagos, Nigeria.
VOA. VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
The United States has sanctioned a commander of Sudan's paramilitary forces, saying he played a leading role in the ongoing violence against civilians in West Darfur. The U.S. Department of Treasury said on Tuesday that Abdulrahman Juma Barakallah led the Rapid Support Forces campaign in West Darfur, committing human rights abuses against civilians, including sexual violence and ethnically motivated attacks. The United Nations and international rights groups have said the atrocities in Sudan amount to war crimes. The Treasury Department said Barakallah also played a key role in kidnapping and killing West Darfur Governor Khamis Abubakar. The war in Sudan broke out in April 2023. The UN says 20,000 people have been killed.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Makbil Yabaro in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Vandy, and our engineer, Audrius Regis, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.